Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to the front lines of freedom. Hoo-wah! I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thanks for joining us on this Thanksgiving weekend. Do be grateful for this great nation we live in. Folks, we truly do live in the safest, freest, and most prosperous nation in the world. Our strength is in our diversity, particularly in our diversity of thought. Americans come in all flavors. We need to respect the right of others to think or vote differently than we do and respect them. The last thing we should be is name callers. I have many friends who see some things differently than I do, and we're still friends. We have the right to disagree. Let's end the name calling in our great nation. Okay, joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is Marine vet Skip Coriel. What was Thanksgiving like for you, Skip? Did you eat turkey or deer?
Well, actually, we had a little bit of both, Colonel. You know, we went out, we had a couple of turkeys, we had some venison, we had some ham. You know, we usually get together and there's usually about 50 Coriels all in the same big room. So I just love it. I love Thanksgiving. I love Christmas, New Year's. I always get together with my family and you know, we just tell all kinds of wonderful stories.
50 Coriels sounds scary to me, but
I'm yeah, we have like a very large platoon.
Hey, you know, but I agree with you. Family time is fantastic time, and this is really the time of year to do it. Or at least it's when we do it, whether other times would be more appropriate or not. Here's what we have for you today. On News and Comments by the Colonel, I'm going to discuss U.S. relations with China, especially as the two leaders recently met and talked. Then Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will contribute his warrant wisdom. Attorney and Air Force vet Frank Spinner will then discuss the case of veteran Corey Claggett, who is, for some reason, imprisoned at Fort Leavenworth. Then American farmer Adam Malone will discuss getting our nation food independent. We'll review the movie of the month with Diane Raver, and we'll discuss last weekend's Surface Academy football game.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
Hey, we welcome your input to this show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or you can do it on Facebook. And now it's time for news and comments by the Colonel on Front Lines of Freedom. Of course, we'll start with the news. Take us there, Skip. What's first?
Well, Colonel, on November 15th, at approximately 10 p.m. in the Gulf of Oman, an Iranian-made unmanned aerial vehicle attacked the Pacific Zircon, a Liberian-flagged commercial tanker. Though there was damage to the vessel, there were no casualties. Exploitation of the debris that hit the vessel reveals that it was a Shahid series one-way attack drone. Quote, "This unmanned aerial vehicle attack against a civilian vessel in this critical maritime strait demonstrates once again the destabilizing nature of Iranian malign activity in the region," said General Kurilla, commander of the U.S. Central Command. A multilateral operation led by the British Royal Navy's HMS Lancaster, including two U.S. naval vessels and a U.S. Navy Poseidon patrol craft, responded to the scene.
Iran is attacking innocent civilian ships. They've done this before, and there's no reason to think they won't in the future. Why is the UN putting up with this? This is not our problem to solve, but the Mideast nations and the UN's. Let's see what happens.
And General Eric Kurilla, commander of U.S. Central Command, made his fourth visit to the Israeli Defense Forces in Israel November 15th, since assuming command of CENTCOM 7 months ago. During the visit, Kurilla, alongside commanding general of the IDF Northern Command, Major General Gordon, visited the Rosh HaNikra crossing point on the blue line between Israel and Lebanon and the Alpha line between Israel and Syria on the Golan Heights. Gordon gave Kurilla an overview of the security challenges along each border, the threat posed by Hezbollah and the IDF focus on security. Kurilla also visited an observation post overlooking the Golan Heights, where Gordon briefed him on munitions and explosive smuggling routes between Lebanon and Syria. Quote, "Israel maintains a remarkably impressive air power capability here in the Nevatim Air Force Base," Kurilla said. "The Israeli Air Force maintains world-class air power with cutting-edge systems, the highest level of professionalism, and a first-class combat capability." Throughout the visit, General Kurilla and the IDF leaders discussed opportunities to improve integrated air and missile defense and regional security. Kurilla reaffirmed his commitment to the IDF U.S. military partnership. Quote, "Our strategic partnerships within the region, to include our longstanding ironclad partnership with the IDF, are critical to regional security and stability. All these trips to the region inform my understanding of the threats and challenges faced by each country and the capabilities available, said Carrilla.
Israel is our only dependable ally in the region and the only democracy. They are under regular attack by radical Islamists and Iran. It's good that we're making our support for Israel clear to the world. I'm glad the general's there regularly.
And Colonel, I'm glad Israel puts up with us sometimes. I mean, it's like we're like fair weather friends sometimes, and I hate to see that.
That is true, but they stand there, and they're the people we need to be aligned with, and we are fortunately acting that way now.
And earlier this month, America learned Poland's eastern border was hit with missiles. These missile strikes sent shockwaves through the world and cost two lives. President Biden revealed our government is investigating how this happened. Biden then alleged that despite certain reports from Ukraine, Russia does not appear to be the culprit behind the attacks on Poland's border. In fact, officials looking into this matter now believe that Ukraine was actually responsible for these missiles, thereby opening a new can of worms. Ukraine President Zelensky faulted Russian missile terror for the two lives claimed in Poland. However, unnamed American officials allege that Ukraine may have hit Poland in a botched attempt to strike Russia or Russian missiles. Officials also revealed the investigations into this incident are far from over. Thus far, Russia has denied striking Poland's border. Russian officials also maintain that anyone pointing fingers at them is trying to escalate already heightened tensions involving their country.
Well, time will tell what truly happened here, but it's pretty clear to me that this was a Ukrainian attack that went wrong. Mistakes do happen, yes, even in war, maybe especially in war. This needs to be sorted out between Ukraine and Poland, but that doesn't keep us from calling Russia evil as they truly are.
The Ukrainian city of Kherson, the only provincial capital captured by Russia, is back in Ukrainian hands, though Moscow's forces are still close enough to remain a menace. The outburst of joy, one of the most significant Ukrainian victories of the nearly nine-month-old war, is tempered by punishing hardships that still haunt the city. Hunger and shortages of medicine, as well as scant electricity, running water, and communications. Criminal and forensics investigators are rushing to document evidence of executions and torture, digging up bodies and coaxing traumatized witnesses to come forward. Already, case files are open on hundreds of suspected war crimes. Victims of torture haltingly recount their ordeals. Demining teams are fanned out across the city and plying muddy fields in outlying former frontline villages, where wrecked military and civilian vehicles line battered roads. And in what might be the most insidious iteration of pain, Kherson's people must now come to terms with the fact that some of their neighbors cooperated with the occupiers. Signs of recovery already dot a city. At hastily created mobile and internet hotspots, people weep into their cell phones as they make contact with loved ones after months of isolation. Humanitarian aid is arriving by the truckload. Kids race up to Ukrainian troops, begging the soldiers to sign their Ukrainian flags. Quote, "We have our city back," said one citizen. "Next comes our country."
This is a blessing, but this war is far from being over. And indeed, with winter hitting, those poor citizens are suffering much, much more. We need to stand with them, but we don't need to be the only ones supporting them financially. And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well-run and on the right path. Politics and politicians are confusing, but we can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you, even if you're not a vet, in getting involved and getting our nation back on track. I encourage you to contact them. Working with them is one of the things I do. Contact cv4a.org. That's cv4a.org. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Front Lines of Freedom, I'll share comments by the Colonel. They will enjoy some more wisdom. Then we'll talk about military justice or injustice with attorney Frank Spinner. At ease, troops, take a break.
The VA frequently denies veterans disability benefits for PTSD. Barry Law has been helping fellow veterans with PTSD fight for compensation for over 20 years. At Barry Law, we've spent decades building a team of attorneys, veterans, and former VA employees to provide veterans with maximum firepower when appealing VA decisions. To appeal your decision, visit PTSDlawyers.com.
This is Marine Vet Skip Coriel with your home defense tip of the week. According to the National Sexual Violence Resource Center, 80% of rape victims knew their attacker. Be careful who you let into your life. If they don't feel right to you, then don't associate with them. My experience has taught me this. When you let crazy people into your life gets crazy. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit homedefenseshow.com.
Fellow Americans, we need your help. PatriotFoods.com, we are fighting for the American farmer. U.S.-only fruits and vegetables from your soil. Go to PatriotFoods.com, use your promo code FREEDOM, and you get 10% off today. Support your U.S. farmer. Promo code FREEDOM, 10% off. Thank you so much.
It's great food. I eat it. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. It is 20 minutes after the hour, and you are in formation and listening to the Front Lines of Freedom all across America. Troops, did you know that American farmers are going out of business because folks are buying foreign food? It's not good for our nation's security if we can't feed ourselves. We need to maintain our food independence by buying food grown in America. Patriot Foods is not emergency food. It's food produced by our farmers. I love it. I eat it. Use the promo code FREEDOM and save 10%. Check PatriotFoods.com. That's PatriotFoods.com. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. The meeting earlier this month between President Biden and Chinese President Xi Jinping went largely as expected. On the Indonesian island of Bali, the leaders of the world's two most powerful nations had their first face-to-face meeting. The session, on the sidelines of the Group of 20 major economic summit, came during a freeze in relations between the two countries. The modest goal was to stabilize a tense relationship and lay the groundwork for a potential future thaw. After Xi and Biden spoke, officials suggested progress had been made. Quote, "I absolutely believe there need not be a new Cold War," Biden said, following a three-hour closed-door discussion. He added that he and Xi, quote, "were candid and clear with one another across the board," end quote, and pointed that the two countries needed to, quote, "be able to work together," end quote, on global challenges like climate change and food insecurity. Xi said, quote, "China-U.S. relations currently face a situation that is not in the interest of the two countries," end quote, and he hoped that he and his American counterpart could steer the bilateral relationship in the right direction. Problem. President Biden has a real problem making sense when he's talking. Can you believe that during this three-hour talk, the very astute dictator of China was impressed by Mr. Biden's intelligence and ability? It was probably like a well-educated businessman dressed as Santa Claus with a five-year-old sitting on his lap saying what he wanted for Christmas. And we can't forget the business deals President Biden's brother and son have with China. Heck, that even might be investigated someday. Add to this, China cares nothing about climate change or food insecurity. Looking at their actions for the past decade shows that. China has clearly and publicly said for years their goal is to knock us down and replace us as the world's most powerful country. Further, they have shown repeatedly they have no ethical limits as they pursue this goal. Nonetheless, Secretary of State Anthony Blinken will be going to Beijing earlier next year as part of an expanding dialogue between the two countries, and it's likely that a number of working groups, including bilateral discussions on climate change, were set to resume operations after China broke off contacts due to the visit to Taiwan by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi in August. Both Biden and Xi came to the sit-down bolstered by domestic developments. At a major Communist Party Congress last month, Xi secured his position as the leader of the one-party Chinese state and raised up loyalists to further cement his indefinite grip on power. He is the absolute dictator of all China, and people do what he says. For outside observers, the long horizon of Xi's rule shows an increasingly aggressive China on the world stage, bent on subverting the international system in its favor while further constricting the space of civil society and dissent at home. And, as we've discussed on this show, over the last 35 years, 162 known researchers and scientists have been working in the U.S. facilities involved in nuclear research and have been spying for Communist China. Those spies have been making considerable contributions to the Chinese military in the development of hypersonic missiles, nuclear weapons, and nuclear submarine programs. And Chinese spies have been associated with or working in every scientific national laboratory, including military facilities, Los Alamos National Laboratory, universities doing research for the Department of Defense, and scientists with top secret clearances in other departments. Chinese researchers and postdoctoral students are inserted into many nuclear and military research programs and are paid by U.S. tax dollars. Biden, to great surprise, emerged from this month's midterm elections with a stronger mandate than anticipated, as his Democrats maintained control of the Senate. He argued that the election results justified his administration's approach to foreign policy after the nationalist disruptions imposed by former President Trump. Note that Biden has, in some areas, maintained the Trump-era status quo, refusing to drop tariffs on China. He is also pressing ahead with an ambitious plan to remove a key cog in the tech supply chain from China by boosting the manufacture of semiconductors within the U.S. and placing a complex regime of export controls on this key equipment to China, what some have called a bureaucratic declaration of economic war. Well, the Biden administration touted Xi's agreement with Biden that Russian President Putin should not threaten the use of nuclear weapons in his war on Ukraine. But that view was not in China's summary. The concern about Taiwan is a more urgent issue. Biden pressed Xi about China's increasingly aggressive actions toward the self-governing island, which is enduring a spike in Chinese military maneuvers near its coastline and entries into its airspace. Xi retorted that Taiwan's future is at the, quote, very core of China's core interests, end quote, and is a red line the U.S. must not cross. Well, bipartisan sympathy has grown in Congress for the Taiwanese plight, with some lawmakers now pursuing legislation that would authorize our government to arm and train Taiwan in advance of a Chinese military invasion, in the same way we aided Ukraine after Russian tanks rolled across its borders. Our military planners believe the prospect of China taking military action against Taiwan is high. That we not budge in our solidarity for Taiwan could prove a problem for Xi, who has in part staked his legitimacy on the promise of Taiwan's eventual unification with the mainland. It's always good to talk with nations regardless of how evil they are, and there are few more evil than China. One of the reasons China has so much control over our nation now is that after World War II, we felt if we just treated them nice, they'd become nice, they'd treat their people well, and truly become our friends. We were wrong. We should be in communication with them, but also we have to stop buying products from China and get them out of our industry and education systems. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. You're listening to Front Lines of Freedom. Now we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have to share this week, Roland?
Well, the Air Force has recorded a new flight record with a nonstop 36-hour mission that covered more than 16,000 miles. The new KC-46A Pegasus completed the longest air mobility command ever to demonstrate the new aircraft's capabilities, and it surpassed the last record of 24 hours, which was set this past May. The aircraft took off from a snow-covered base in New England and refueled F-22 Raptors over sun-splashed light blue waters in the Pacific. During the day-and-a-half mission, the KC-46 was refueled by two other KC-46s, and three air crews took turns flying the airplane, two Air National Guard crews and one active duty crew. During the mission, the KC-46 refueled F-22 Raptors in a closed-loop pattern off the coast of Hawaii. The aircraft then continued west to U.S. territory Guam, crossing the international dateline, before returning back home to New Hampshire. The aircraft carried a total of 16 crew, including pilots, boom operators, aircraft maintainers, and a flight surgeon. The flight surgeon used a NASA app to track data about the pilot, such as reaction time. The goal was to test the aircraft's ability to self-assess and also evaluate whether using multiple crews on a work-rest cycle would be preferable to the current standard practice, which is utilizing alertness medications to sustain a crew for long durations of work. Now, the Air Force has about 40 KC-46s so far, which are based off the Boeing 767. But they've had a number of issues since taking delivery of the first aircraft back in 2020. It's had issues with the refueling system, the boom, and even its remote vision system, which is an array of cameras and monitors used to operate the refueling system. In October, a KC-46 had a mishap while it was refueling another aircraft, and that caused damage. The boom fix, or what the Air Force is calling the boom telescoping actuator redesign, will not be ready until sometime in 2026. And without this redesign, the KC-46 cannot refuel A-10s. Evidently, A-10s are, quote, too thrust limited to overcome the stiff boom issue. But even with these aircraft issues, the Air Force has determined that the KC-46 is fit for worldwide deployment. You know, and frankly, it's about time. The Air Force has had KC-135s for more than 60 years, so it's definitely time for a new aircraft. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Hey, thanks, Roland. That was neat. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss the imprisonment of Army vet Corey Claggett with attorney Frank Spinner. Then we'll talk with American farmer Adam Malone. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, you're standing tall with Frontlines of Freedom. I'll be right back. Hey, it's time for sit-ups. Start with 50, take a break, do another 50, then stand at ease. Troops America has changed, and if you're like me, you'd defend yourself and your family if necessary. But as noble as this is, experts recommend never speaking to the police without an attorney, even if you're the victim. That's why I'm a member of U.S. Law Shield, the very best self-defense insurance that I've found. They provide unlimited attorney coverage for civil, criminal, appeal, and retrial at a very affordable price. Check uslawshield.com and use the code FRONTLINES. That's uslawshield.com.
We were instrumental in passing the VA Mission Act so more veterans could have options and freedom in their health care.
We are leading the charge to end America's endless wars, bringing thousands of troops home and stopping trillions of dollars from being wasted.
Our key to success?
You. We bring your voice to leaders calling the shots so we can all have a better future. We are Concerned Veterans for America, the voice of veterans for freedom and prosperity.
Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement.
Troops, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's an honor to welcome attorney Frank Spinner. Frank spent 28 years in the Air Force and now helps troops and veterans who are having problems with our military. Indeed, he's helping a friend of mine who's now imprisoned for who knows what. So welcome to the show, Frank. Glad you could join us.
Glad to be here.
Frank, start by telling us about your time in the Air Force. When and why did you join? What did you do? Were you an attorney during all that time? Or tell us about it.
Sure. And I have a very unusual career. I entered the Air Force Academy as a cadet in 1968. And I was very fortunate to be selected to receive an appointment. But as things happened, I fell in love with a beautiful woman, my bride now of 52 years. And so in my third year at the Academy, I decided to resign to marry her. And that was the best decision I ever made. However, some people may remember General Robin Olds from Vietnam War fame. He was the commandant of cadets at the Academy. And because I was a cadet in good standing, they said, well, we'll send you to go to school, finish your education under the Airman Education and Commissioning Program in the Air Force. Well, what that meant is I left the Academy. I served some enlisted time. They promoted me to Staff Sergeant E5 in the Air Force. And then I went to Louisiana Tech University under that program and completed my degree. Well, subsequent to that, I was pilot qualified. I was supposed to go to pilot training, but the Vietnam War was winding down and I had a physical issue that made it difficult. So instead of going to pilot training, the Air Force sent me first through OTS, I was commissioned, and then they sent me to missiles, and I was a missile control officer at Minot Air Force Base. Didn't take long to figure out that a Southern boy like me from Texas was not too happy with that cold assignment. So I'd been in missiles for 1 year when Senator Goldwater sponsored a bill in Congress to send 25 officers a year to law school. So they were having a problem retaining lawyers for careers after the Vietnam War. So I applied for that program, even though I never had a desire to be a lawyer. I just thought that might be my ticket out of Minot. And I was very fortunate again to be selected in the very first group in a program called Funded Legal Education Program. So the Air Force sent me back to my hometown where I attended St. Mary's University Law School, San Antonio. And the Air Force picked up the full tab and paid me while I went to school. Once I completed that in 1977, I was assigned as a judge advocate. And from there, I served the rest of my Air Force career as a judge advocate, finally retiring in 1994. And you mentioned 28 years. With all those changes, I ended up serving actually 24 and retired in 94. So that's pretty much my Air Force career. In my Air Force career, I worked mostly in military justice as an area defense counsel, a chief circuit defense counsel, and appellate defense counsel. When I retired, I was the chief appellate defense counsel for the Air Force. So most of my time spent as a judge advocate was in military justice. I was also had one stint at the Air Force Academy on the faculty, even though I was a dropout. They let me come back and teach law. and I became the course director for Law for Commanders, a senior level course at the Air Force Academy. So I've taught military justice and I've practiced as a defender, as a prosecutor, as a trial counsel, and as an appellate counsel. And when I retired in 94, I hung up my shingle as a civilian defense counsel, and I have worked exclusively in military law as a civilian defense counsel since 1994 to the present.
Well, it sounds like you should have been buying lottery tickets because you stumbled into more good deals than you could shake a stick at and kept running into them and ended up having a productive, obviously fun for you, career. That sounds like a really good time. And it led you to what you're doing now, which you enjoy doing. So life's good.
I feel very blessed.
I understand. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with attorney and Air Force veteran Frank Spinner. Okay, the Uniform Code of Military Justice is the law that our military work under. The UCMJ, as it's referred to, I was comfortable with it when I was on active duty, but I retired in 86. It's an ongoing thing. Was it a functional, good, nothing's perfect, but a good system for our military to be working under?
Yes, however, comma. working both at the trial level and the appellate level, I came to the conclusion, seeing how the sausage was made, that the military gets it right about 85% of the time. And I think they miss it about 15% of the time. Now, that's just my best guess. But I tell people there's a reason they have appellate judges and appellate courts, and they have them in the military also. And that's because sometimes trials get it wrong, and so you go to your military court of criminal appeals, and sometimes they get it wrong, and then you go to the court of appeals for the armed forces, and sometimes they get it wrong, and you go to the Supreme Court of the United States. So it's not a perfect system by any measure, but I believe it is overall a just system.
Well, that's good. I felt it was that way. I didn't have the lawyer perspective that you just gave it, but I'm glad to know that it's there and it's working.
And that's why I went to civilian law exclusively in this area, because with my seasoning, I felt like I have a passion for defending military members. And that's what guides me and has guided me the rest of my life.
Well, we took an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States, and there was no end to that oath. We're still serving it, aren't we?
Yes.
Our sort of topic today is a young man named Corey Claggett. Corey was a young man who enlisted in the Army, served in the Mideast as an infantryman. He was, on one occasion, he was the lowest ranking private in his squad. His squad was given a mission to go clear off an area. They were told everybody on it was, at least military age males, were the enemy and were to be taken care of. One point, they captured a couple of guys that they didn't think they would ever capture, but they did. His squad leader told him to shoot him. He did. He was later on tried and convicted of murder and sentenced to prison. He served 10 years, was out on parole, and then he got picked up off parole and is back in prison. That's sort of the overview picture. There's 100 different goofy things about this, but let's talk about his status now. He was on parole, had a girlfriend, he had a job, and he got picked up for, I think, violating his parole. Can you start there and talk a little about Corey's situation? Because it's his situation now that I want us to focus on.
Right. So Corey, when he went on parole, his residence was in North Carolina. And so he was limited to staying within the state of North Carolina. And whenever he wanted to go out of that state, it's okay he just has to inform his parole officer, and that would be okay. Well, his girlfriend lived in South Carolina, and one of the infractions that caused his parole to be revoked was that he had gone to South Carolina without informing his parole officer. But Corey, he struggled for many years in parole and became involved in drugs. So his parole officer had sort of given him a warning and said, hey, you need to get some drug treatment and go into a program. And if you don't go in the program, that might impact whether you can remain on parole. And Corey chose not to go into the program, and that word got back to the parole officer. So an additional allegation of his parole violation was that he did not go into drug rehab. So while he was living with his girlfriend, and there was evidence that he had informed the parole officer that he was living with her after I think he'd already gone down there. Nonetheless, for those two factors, the parole officer reported him to the Army, and the Army brought him back to Leavenworth, the U.S. Disciplinary Barracks, for a parole revocation hearing.
There's more to talk about Corey, and Frank's going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom Troops. It's push-up time. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do most days. Then take a break, but stay in the area. Frank and I will be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with all of your everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, health-related services, or information on retirement planning, financial resources, or more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all of your daily needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net wants to thank you for your service, and may God continue to bless the U.S. of A.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Attorney Frank Spinner about Corey Claggett. Okay, Corey was on parole. He should have been dealing with his drugs. He wasn't. He may or may not have followed the instructions of his parole officer to keep him advised where he was. I did not know, but I'm not surprised that Corey was on drugs. He was jailed for obeying an order that he believed was lawful for 10 years, but much of it in solitary confinement. And because then he was dishonorably discharged, he had no VA support, no medical support. So my heart's sort of with Corey. And that doesn't mean that he shouldn't be following the instructions and obeying the rules. So he was in the wrong Carolina, had not taken the actions that he needed to, that is to deal with his addiction. And the Army came and picked him up and took him back to Fort Leavenworth. That's where we were at the end of the last segment. So what happens then? I know people have been sent to Leavenworth to serve prison time. I've known people that have gotten out on parole. I've never run into one who got picked up for violation and taken back in. How does that work?
Well, he's essentially arrested and returned in custody to Fort Leavenworth. Once he got there, obviously, he goes into confinement. And then they schedule a parole revocation hearing. Now, it's a very informal hearing. It's not in front of a lawyer or a judge. It's held in front of a hearing officer who is a civilian who works at the USDB. He is entitled to representation, so he was represented by a military lawyer, and we are allowed to call witnesses. And then a search began for someone, a civilian lawyer, to represent him, and somehow that search landed on me, and I expressed a willingness to take on his case for a much reduced fee and represent him at the hearing, which I did.
Okay, what was that like?
Well, it was a new experience for me. I've done just about everything in military law, but I've never had a parole revocation hearing. But most hearings are the same. The government presents their case, the respondent, or in this case, the inmate, presents his case, and then the hearing officer makes a recommendation, and merely a recommendation. And the recommendation is sent to the Army Clemency and Parole Board in Washington, D.C. They make the final decision whether to revoke parole, which would have released Corey, or they can decide to keep him in confinement. And then there are secondary issues about whether he loses his good time or not and how much more time he has to serve before he can apply for parole again. But the hearing itself only lasted about half a day. We did call a number of witnesses. And we had, at the end of the hearing, and Corey made a statement too. So he was able to tell his story as well. And then the revocation officer, or the hearing officer, not revocation officer, but he does not disclose his recommendation. However, through some comments he made, we came out of that hearing very hopeful. The hearing went extremely well, and we believed that the hearing officer was going to, in fact, recommend that Corey be released based on certain conditions, that he get a job, that he live with his girlfriend, and that he seek drug treatment. I'm sad to report, though, that when it got up to the Army Clemency and Parole Board, without us knowing what the recommendation was, they decided that his parole would be revoked, in fact. And also, unfortunately, there is no appeal of this decision.
So that means he's back in, and he doesn't even know for how long. Do we know?
Well, there are two possibilities. I did contact the facility to find out if they'd set what's called a minimum release date. And I was told that they didn't know, but they thought it would be January of 2025. They did not tell me why they didn't know yet. They did not tell me how they came to that date. But they did tell me that he would be eligible to apply again for parole on his anniversary of the date that he came back into military custody. So I believe that's either in July or of August of this year is when he went into military custody. So he will be able to apply for parole again, same time in 2023.
Okay, you're an attorney, and you've been seeing this stuff. Does all this make sense to you? Is this following some kind of a reasonable pattern that, again, there are no perfect people, but are you comfortable that at least the process is proper?
I'm not comfortable with it. I believe we should have been given an opportunity to see the recommendation of the hearing officer and comment on it. The possibility always exists that he did not capture everything that we presented, or he misstated what was presented. And so I'm used to the appellate courts where, you know, when you appeal a trial, you get a copy of the record of trial, you get a copy of all the evidence. And then when you go up on appeal, you can attack it. And then if an appellate court rules against you and you go to the next appellate court, you get their opinion. And so you get to challenge their opinion. So this process is very one-sided.
Okay. Well, this is the story of Corey Claggett. Right now, he is at Fort Leavenworth. And we don't know for sure for how long, but apparently next July or so, he can apply for a parole. In the meanwhile, there are some folks who are helping look out for him. One of them is you, Frank. As we wrap up, if anybody wants to get in touch with you, or Corey purposes or others, how would they do that?
My email address is the best way. It's law, L-A-W, because I'm a lawyer, spin, S, P as in Papa, I, N as in November, the first four letters of my last name. So lawspin@AOL.com.
We'll be covering Corey's story as it goes on. Again, I knew him for a while, not on active duty, but he's a fine young man. He is a bit messed up, but then again, 10 years of mostly being confined alone. We need to stand with this young man. And folks, I'm asking you to keep him in your prayers. Frank, thank you. Thanks for joining us today. Thank you for your service to our nation in uniform and now. Thanks for being part of the Corey team. We'll be in touch.
I'm staying on board.
This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour talking about Feeding America with Adam Lallone. Then we'll review our movie of the month with Diane Raver. Next, we'll discuss last weekend's Service Academy football games, and we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag military history and our self-defense report. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for jumping jacks. Do 50 good ones, grab some protein, rehydrate with water, and finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.